Good evening, listeners. It's May 20th, 2018, and you're listening to 88.7 KBVR Corvallis. It is just currently after 7 p.m., and on a Sunday, that can mean only one thing. It's time for another episode of Inspiration Dissemination. I'm Kristen Finch.
And I'm Lillian Paget-Cobb. At Oregon State, we have more than 4,000 graduate students in over 80 different programs of study, and here on Inspiration Dissemination, we feature the research and personal stories of one of these students each week. If you're a graduate student at OSU and you're interested in coming on the show, or you just want to find out more about all the awesome things going on at Oregon State, check out our blog at blogs.oregonstate.edu/inspiration, where you can find out all about our up-and-coming guests and links to our Twitter and Facebook pages.
Inspiration Dissemination is recorded live, and should they occur, any opinions expressed on the show are that of the hosts and their guests and do not necessarily represent Oregon State University or this station. Tonight, we're joined by Minerva Zayas from the Department of Women, Gender, and Sexuality Studies. And Minerva's going to start us off with something that she brought to read for us.
Hello, everyone. I just wanted to say thank you to Kristen and Lillian for having me here today. I will be presenting my poem called Inexistent. Tied together like the knots on rope, exhilarating breaks and countless thoughts. One knot and twist after another, entangled deft of messages. Rippling and slowing simultaneously, the last strand reminds you to hang on. You must stand alone and let your strength pull together. By tangled messes, don't fear the change to snap, for you will rebuild a knot structure that's inexistent.
Thank you, Minerva. That was wonderful. And so can you tell us a little bit about that piece?
Yeah, so I was inspired to write this poem that I titled Inexistent because I was thinking about a rope, mainly thinking about like tug of war. How you have two opposing teams or two people that maybe are trying to take a side, right? And are trying to pull apart and have something be like, no, I'm going to win or no, I'm going to win. So I was inspired by that in terms of our political climate and ways that we are trying to, as a group, come together and build something new and find a place and a way to have our voices be heard. So, yeah.
That's awesome. So do you write a lot of poetry? Is this something that you find helpful to do in your spare time, or it's an outlet of some sort? Tell us about that.
I'd have to say it's a little bit of both. I really enjoy writing poetry as a form of healing and as a form of processing my emotions and my thoughts. I also find it really, I guess, as a form of coming across different audiences and folks that may not be in the academy. So something that other folks can connect to. So, yeah.
I was wondering, do you ever, do you just write the poetry or do you also perform it? Do you speak it out in public?
Yeah, so I usually will find outlets where I can perform. Here in Corvallis, we have the Corvallis Poetics that will do monthly shows at Innerzone. So it'll usually be the first Friday of every month. And I'll usually go and share my poetry when I have time, of course. Or I'll share some of my poetry with other peers and colleagues in the poetry club or even my colleagues in my program. So it's a really great way to connect with other folks. So.
And so tell us a little bit about your research here at Oregon State.
So it's a lot to unpack, but just to give you all a glimpse, it is, so I'm in the first year of my master's program here at Oregon State. My research is about understanding Latinx and Chicanx identity in terms of how those intersections coincide with the LGBT community, and specifically how their activism takes place within the academy and goes on. So not necessarily just within the academy, but how folks are taking their activism outside of the academy. So into their communities, into their art, into their poetry. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you working with an advisor on this? Can you tell us a little bit about the person that you're working with?
Yeah, so at the moment I have a really great team that I'm working with. My advisor is Dr. Susan Schall, and she's been amazing. So my first term here at OSU, I was really nervous to co-teach and present or talk in front of students, and I thought I was going to be around like 50 students, but I was only in front of like 10 students that were honor students. So Susan Schall really helped me to engage with the students and gave me the liberty to do that. So Dr. Schall, his specialty is around a liberatory learning praxis around teaching and learning in ways that we could be liberated through our teaching and learning. And she also takes a feminist perspective on religious studies. So she's been awesome. We clicked right away, and she's somebody that I was like, felt like she was like a mom to me. So it was really good to connect with her. So she's my main advisor. And
you kind of had heard about her before you started your master's program, right?
Yeah. So as an undergrad, when I first took Intro to Women and Gender Studies, I remember reading Susan Schall and Janet Leigh's book, Feminist Voices, their textbook that is a part of her program. So it was really neat to kind of connect and see that, like, I didn't know who they were before, and now I know who they both are, and they're both great mentors to me. So it's been great to find those commonalities.
That must be an exciting moment to have a textbook, and then eventually you're working with this person that wrote a textbook, which I can imagine for some undergrads is kind of out of this world. You don't ever expect that that's going to happen.
Yeah, it kind of just happened out of nowhere. Like, I was like, I've seen that name somewhere, but I'm not 100% sure. So it's been really awesome to connect and have that experience so far. So, yeah.
So I was interested in, you mentioned that your advisor is interested in religious studies through a feminist lens and this liberatory teaching and learning experience. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and maybe give some specific examples of specifically, like, I guess it was feminism in the Bible you were mentioning?
Yeah, so when I first thought about feminism in the Bible, I thought that was like out of, like, it was just like, what is this? Like, I'm somebody that grew up Catholic. So as somebody that was grown up as Catholic, it was always really embedded in my culture and really embedded as a Mexican person to embrace that. And even though I have taken a big part of that into myself, I haven't necessarily claimed it as a part of who I am. My mom taught me to be spiritual and taught us all to be very spiritual. So I've always thought it was really interesting. So taking that personal experience into the classroom and understanding feminism through an intersectional lens was really interesting. Nonetheless, Dr. Schall really brought to me and a lot of our students the way that the Bible can be queer. And in a sense, what it means to be queer is what it means to be unordinary or something that is living outside of a norm. So a lot of the times what we would do in our classes, we would look at a Bible passage and we would look at it and say, oh, well, actually, you know, we could interpret this as a way of like this person had a partner and they, you know, even though they seemed like they would have been two friends, they were living together and they ended up divorcing the other two guys and they ended up being together, which in our current culture wouldn't be seen that way. But if you put on like that feminist glasses or that feminist lens, it's seen as something queer or something that you wouldn't necessarily see in the Bible. So
like
it's really interesting.
Like alternative lifestyles that you never really thought would be present like back in that time or in that text. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. So it's we did a lot of analysis of parables and short stories and just things along those lines. And as somebody that grew up Catholic, I never really read the Bible. I would just hear it in church. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really interesting to kind of take another spin on that. And I learned a lot from the class. And I try to remember that as what Susan Schall taught me and my peers in our first quarter, we took a feminist teaching and learning course. What we learned is that we need to also place ourselves in the same space as the students. So in my classroom and as a TA, teacher's assistant myself, I try to remember that I am just like my students. I try to remember that there's a lot of the same things that we struggle with as students in general, but for some reason that power dynamic sets us apart. So Yeah.
And did you have ways of sort of deconstructing that power dynamic?
Yeah. So I tell my friends and family a lot of the times that having those like feminist lens or having on that critical lens a lot of the times is something you could, like, once you put it on, you can never take it off. So I feel like with that in mind, you know, women in gender studies, feminist studies, we are taking a look at the way that systems have constructed our world, right? So we're seeing the world in a way that is seen through a white heteronormative lens, in a way that is seen if you're a white middle class or upper class male that's straight, the world isn't really meant for you. And secondarily to that, we see women as not being a part of that. So, you know, in our current time now, we're seeing that happen a lot more. And we're seeing a lot of folks of color speaking out in terms of what that means and having their voice heard. So I think right now more than ever, it's important to recognize that in every aspect. And for me specifically is within the academy. So, yeah.
And so what do you plan to do with your research to kind of get at that area?
So in terms of what I mentioned earlier about wanting to speak to Latinx folks that identify as queer or LGBT within the LGBT community, I would want to really highlight their experiences and kind of see where it is that really find representation within our communities. I feel like we don't see a lot of people of color or, for example, even Latinx folks in politics or taking up important spaces. And through my research, I really hope to highlight not only their experiences and put their stories out there, but also eventually I would like to have a podcast myself to where I can showcase their experiences, have folks come to my show and talk about that in ways that I can connect with my communities or other communities, because we know the academy is only set for a certain amount of people or only those folks that have that knowledge or that language to talk about those things. And I'm very mindful of that as a Mexican person. So, yeah.
One thing I'm wondering is you mentioned that one part of your thesis proposal was delving more into activism and what activism means to different groups of people. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about activism and really what that does mean, what you've seen.
So based on my experience so far, I always keep in mind, since I, you know, now as a master's student, keeping in mind the land that we are on. So we are on the traditional land and territory of the Chepenefa band of the Kalapuya. So as we know, these indigenous folks were removed from this land, and now it is known as Corvallis, Oregon. So keeping in mind that, I feel like it's really important within my scholarship and my work as form of activism to deconstruct what that means. So in terms of understanding that the academy isn't a place for students of color or somebody that is labeled as other, now more than ever, I feel like activism is important in terms of claiming either language or informs that folks are claiming their experience within the larger culture, ways that folks are using art or poetry or even research, like the kind that I want to do with interviewing participants about their experiences. So I really want to understand what that means to students. More specifically, I really want to talk to students that have been doing this kind of work in the academy and ways that they've navigated these spaces as somebody that's queer and has to understand what it means to be queer in a world that is catered to white folks or a world that is catered to people that identify within that queer label that is seen as white. Because I feel like as someone that identifies as queer myself, I go to my family or my hometown and it's almost like I am rejected as a queer person, but I'm seen as Mexican. But in the queer community, I am seen as somebody that is other and not white. So I don't know. I guess I'm speaking from my personal experience. So in terms of what I've struggled with as a queer person of color, I really want to understand what that means for other folks and how they've navigated. I haven't found myself finding a lot of other Latinx queer folks of color on campus. I have some that I feel really supported by, but I feel like I'm still missing that. And I wonder if other folks feel the same way. So I really want to highlight their experiences and know what activism means to them. So, yeah.
And as a step toward also creating a community, like a more supportive community as well.
Oh, yeah. I feel like that is needed right now more than ever. I mean, we're seeing, you know, even a couple of days ago, we saw the mass shootings that happened or the gun violence that's been happening that happened in Texas. And then we saw, like, a friend was sharing with me about that bus that took a U-turn and there was like a bunch of children in there and many of them were injured and many of them died. So I just don't have any words for that. I feel like I try to find my community in moments like that when I see that the world feels like it's falling apart. And up to date now, that of what I've read recently is that we've had 22 mass shootings. And it's like, why are we not taking a look at the bigger picture, right? We're not taking a look at the way that our society and our legal system, and I'm taking a critical race feminisms class, so I feel like I'm thinking a lot about legal studies. And in terms of legal studies, I've really realized and noticed that our world more and more isn't catered to the other. If you have a mental disability or if you're in a relationship that is surrounded around domestic violence, you might not be able to come out of that if you're not set up to have that kind of knowledge or that privilege to know what that kind of relationship may or may not look like. And then once again, that goes into perpetuating these systems that disregard the other, right? So it's kind of depressing every week in my critical race feminisms class, we come to a conclusion of we need a whole new system. Like, like us trying to dismantle the patriarchy is what we need to do. But in reality, we need something totally new. So, and it's like, okay, well, what now? We're kind of left like this with what now kind of moment. But then we remember, me and my colleagues remember that we are here in the academy trying to make a difference. But while we're in it, it doesn't necessarily feel that way.
Right. So, yeah. And we kind of talked about that a little bit when we spoke before, in that like you're kind of, your personal experience is driving your research. And although the academy right now is not necessarily a place for the other, or it doesn't have very supportive spaces for the other, you guys are here. And so it's going toward that direction. And this is the first step, even though it might not be supportive while you're here. Is that what you feel?
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought that up, because what I've realized so far through this academic journey that I'm on is that I must work from within the system and I must challenge the system in order to recreate something for us. And this is where I'm like, we need the representation. We need other folks of color in Congress. We need queer Latinx folks that represent these communities and that are speaking out about what this means. We need more trans activists. We need more folks that are willing to speak about what this means and how it really affects our communities. And, you know, I think back to my mom, and I always think back to my mom, and I think she's listening with my siblings. So I always remember her as a strong role model and as somebody that, even though she didn't have the education to do what she wanted to do, she came to the United States and said, I'm doing this for you guys so you guys could have the opportunity. And she is living outside of her norms in a way that a traditional Mexican woman wouldn't. So a lot of the times I bring her into the classroom and say, my mom is queer in her own way, even though she doesn't know what that means, right? Because she doesn't have the language for it. But that's the way that I see her. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting what you bring up about changing the system from within. And that's really the only framework I think that we have to work with, even it is highly imperfect and it's a broken system, but the change must come from within. And I think what you talk about with representation, that's the only place to start. It's important.
Yeah, so at the moment that's where I'm at. I'm trying to juggle what these ideas mean, and I'm speaking to you all and from a place that I'm still unsure, but I'm kind of clear in a sense of where I want to take this research. I guess kind of what we talked about, it really reminds me of one of my current projects right now. So for my critical race feminisms class, what I'm going to be doing is doing research on mixed status families. So mixed status families are families that have family members that are U.S. citizens and that are also undocumented. So what I'm going to do, and I know a lot of folks back in my hometown and folks in general that have gone through the immigration status process, and some of them have succeeded in staying in this country, and or others have had to go back to their homeland. So Mexico, you know, because these are the folks that I'm interacting with. So what I'm going to do for this project is gather their stories and really showcase them in my paper as a counter narrative and a counter story of saying, even though, you know, I there's not necessarily anything specific we could do to at the moment, I think even showcasing their stories is so powerful. And I think that's really what I want to do, is give voice and shed light on these stories and how folks are living within these dynamics.
Do you think that you might also share these stories through the podcast that you mentioned earlier? Would that be one potential outlet for the storytelling?
I hope so. I feel like that's one thing that I've really learned while being here at Oregon State, is the power of storytelling and the true power of, you know, there's a story to every side, and really remembering that, you know, something that is happening to all of us is going to affect all of us differently. And I see myself as a peacemaker, and it's really hard sometimes because I want everybody to get along. But nonetheless, I remember that we all have different positionalities and places in this world, and that creates our experience. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yep. We're totally about that in inspiration dissemination. We love hearing people's stories. And Minerva, before we have to wrap up, I want to know kind of what were you doing before you had this master's in mind? When you were an undergrad, was there a moment that happened that you just knew that this kind of research and looking at people's identities and sharing their stories and unpack their personal experience, was there a moment when that really dawned on you as your path?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I attended Eastern Washington University in Cheney, Washington. For you folks that may not know, it's about 5 hours from Seattle. I'm from Wenatchee. If anybody knows where Wenatchee is, it is right in the middle of Washington State. So 2.5 hours from Seattle and 2.5 hours to Spokane. Spokane is about 20 minutes from Cheney. So Spokane is one of the biggest towns in Washington. So Cheney was very conservative, a lot smaller than here and a lot more conservative than here in some sense or in some ways. I was a Ronald D. McNair scholar. So this program prepared you to become a grad student or get a fully funded graduate opportunity to showcase your work. And it was specifically for first generation low income undergrad students.
So, sorry, I was curious, how did you find out about the McNair scholarship? Did someone turn you on to that this would be a great opportunity for you? Or did you have to discover that opportunity yourself?
It was a mix of both. So I'd spoken to the director, I'd spoken to a lot of other peers that were a part of that program. And they're like, you'd be really great for this. And I feel like during my time at Eastern, during the first 2 or 3 years, I was like, just going to school doesn't seem like that's it for me. Like, I knew I wanted to get a master's, but I never knew in what. And for the longest time, I wanted to be a counselor. And I still have this thought in the back of my head that I want to help folks through well-being and wellness and having a healthy mindset in the ways that is accessible to them. So with that being said, I joined McNair and I started exploring my ideas. We did a paid internship, and this program comes with a stipend, and it was an amazing program. If anybody that's listening could have access to this and is in the same place that I was, I would say totally go for it. It's a great opportunity. So that really prepared me to come to grad school. We wrote papers, we presented, we did really cool stuff. So with this program, I was able to really explore my ideas. And with that, I was understanding my own self as a queer person and what it meant for me to be in the academy. I read a lot about Chicana feminisms and the stories around Mexican American women that were fighting for their rights within the Cesar Chavez movement in the 1960s, and how they felt like they didn't have a voice during that time, where this farm workers movement was for rights for everybody, but women still felt excluded from this movement. So just reading on that, yeah.
I'm curious, is there, if someone would want to find out more about this, is there a particular book or resource that you would recommend them towards?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. But one of the ones that I could think of at the top of my head is Chicana Voices, so History on Chicana Thought. And I believe it's edited by Alma Garcia. So these are stories and historical writings by Chicana women that have talked about these things before. So reading that was one of those like eye-opener moments where I was like, I really want to find more work on this. I really want to highlight more people's experiences, specifically queer women at the time or queer Chicana women. So I went on to do this research project where I interviewed queer Chicana women on campus, and they talked about their family dynamics, and they talked about culture and school and relationships and how this all intersected with who they are and ways where they felt like it was important for them to showcase who they were. And a lot of them were out women. So a lot of them were saying that even them being out was a huge step for other women to be out and other queer folks to be out. And Cheney is a very conservative place. You don't really see a lot of out Latinx folks from my experience. That's kind of what it seemed like. Nonetheless, I feel like it's getting there. And the folks that I would talk to were just as much as involved in wanting to showcase that than I was at the time. So That's kind of where it all began, and wanting to explore identity formation through this psychological lens, but also through the way that our society constructs the idea of the self was really important to me, and is still, in a sense, important to how identity is formed and whatnot. So, Yeah.
I want to remind the listeners that this is KBVR Corvallis 88.7 FM, and you are listening to Inspiration Dissemination. We are here on the campus of Oregon State University, and we're talking to Minerva Zayas from Women, Gender, and Sexuality Studies. And Minerva, or Lily, do you have any last questions for Minerva before we wrap up?
Yeah, I was wondering, do you have a plan for what's next?
Oh my gosh, I have so many plans. I kind of, how I mentioned to you both before, I have a lot of things I want to do. My main goal that I've had for a long time since I was in high school was I really want to be a counselor or a psychologist. And I really want to gear my research and my counseling, if I do decide to do a counseling program, around Latinx folks, Chicanx folks that identifies queer, having more cultural competency and counseling skills that keep in mind culture for Latinx folks. A lot of the times, even in my own, as a Mexican person, if somebody has some form of anxiety or depression or something, that's seen as something that like, oh, well, if you just sleep, that'll go away. Or, you know, tienes un susto, like somebody scared you, or like, it's seen as like somebody did this to you or you're just going through this. But it's like, well, maybe it's just anxiety. I mean, and I know I'm mindful that I'm like feeding into the system, but it's like, this is something that can be helpful for folks. And I kind of want to mesh those two together of like culture and these psychological ideas of ways to create a cultural competency awareness of Latinx folks and their experiences through counseling. So that's one of many. So, yeah.
Great. Well,
and then did you have a short poem that you wanted to close out with?
Yeah. So I have a part one and part two. I hope I could share that. Yeah. If that's okay.
Yeah.
So this one is called Resistance of Chaos. So humans grow strong like trees, flourishing minds and spirits, cultivating community, fulfilling the spirit, creating relationships. Resistance of chaos and change. So I wrote a part two. I wrote part one fall quarter. This is part two that I wrote last quarter. So resistance of chaos, part two. Humans grow and break like trees, brave egos and vicious attentions, cultivating minds and fulfilling saneness. Broken together, humans grow strong, like sequoia trees. Sheltered and caught, the land of the lost, conquered by the unjust. Wise trunks stand, resistance of chaos and change.
Wow, that's really nice.
Love it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming onto the show with us, Minerva. It's been great hearing your story. And before you go, we have two traditions that we close out each show with. And the first is to ask you for some advice. Could be advice for yourself 5 years ago, 2 years ago. It could be for a prospective graduate student, maybe in your department or in a similar department, or just someone who identifies, shares the same identities that you do. And do you have any advice for the listeners?
My advice in general, which is something that I've learned through my advisor here at OSU, is to live your truth and to embrace that truth. So no matter what it is that, whether it's painful or hurtful, embracing what that means and liberating yourself through your truth will come through healing. And through that healing will come a process of growth and transformation. And without that transformation and that growth and that healing process, we can't become our full selves. So essentially really loving yourselves to that extent, to where self-love and self-compassion and self-respect and self-love is vital to our well-being. And I really want to share that with everybody. And it's something I try to live by. So thank you all.
Yeah, thank you. And our last tradition is to play a song for you at your request. And you've actually provided two songs, which is such a treat. Cool. And so which songs have you selected, and why did you select them?
So the first one that I selected was Hotel California. This song is amazing. When I heard it for the first time was maybe like 2 or 3 years ago. And one of my roommates showed it to me, and I was surprised because I've never heard it, and it's a kind of an old song. And she told me that this song was a song that she listened to when she was crossing the border and from Mexico to the United States, and at the home where she was staying at to receive resources and support, this song came on. So every time I hear that song, it reminds me of folks like her and undocumented students that are in our, you know, that are in the academy, that are paying for their education. And I remember her and a lot of folks that have had that experience. So I wanted to dedicate that to them.
And then you also picked a second one for us?
Yeah, so the second one is A Sky Full of Stars by Coldplay. And I love the song because it reminds me to stay positive and that there's like a lot of possibilities and opportunities out there for all of us. And it's just like a really great reminder of being positive and around the people that you love and your community. And I just love Coldplay, so I'm kind of biased, I guess. So
I like your choice of the Eagles, though. That's one of my favorite songs.
Right? Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll close it out. Yeah. Inspiration Dissemination with Hotel California. It's a request from our guest, Minerva Zayas. This is Inspiration Dissemination, and we are on every Sunday at 7 p.m. with a different graduate student story. So definitely tune in next week or find us at our podcast on Apple Podcasts, named the same as our show, Inspiration Dissemination. Here it is, the Eagles Hotel California. Thank you.